Michael, this book was a process, as every book is, of course, and you were very gracious to send me an early version of the book, and I was very unhelpful in that I only looked at a chapter or two, and I think I sent you a couple of comments, but many more people looked at it in detail. And then I read through and skimmed through a bunch of it, and then when I got the final copy of the book, I looked at it and said, this is not the same book. I mean, like it changed a lot from the early version. Tell me about that journey of like what changed and what happened.
It was so interesting because I wanted to get to kind of test this book with people who I knew and trusted, like you. So I was like, I'm going to get feedback from people, and I really worked hard on this draft. And I was like, okay, this is basically the book. So I'm going to send this out expecting mostly praise, maybe a few little ads or builds or tweaks here and there. I sent it out and mostly I got a wave of indifference back from people. And, you know, I've now written enough books that I know that the early and middle drafts can be a bit disheartening. If you choose to let them be, if you choose to think that the quality of those drafts is a reflection of the quality of the idea or the quality of the book that's going to be, I'm slightly wiser now. So most of the time I can remember that writing a crappy first draft and third draft, and I think probably what I shared with you was like closer to a fifth draft. So I kind of done a whole lot of work around this. And I was like, oh, I'm not quite as far along on this process as I thought. But why I thought this might be an interesting conversation for you and me to have, Dave, is first of all, just for people to have a quick glimpse behind the scenes around what it takes to create and what a long period of time it's shoddy before it's not shoddy. But what I ended up doing, Dave, the most fundamental change I made in the book is I took the first third of it and I made it the appendix. And I realized that I needed to make the most important idea I had in the book in the first chapter, because most people want to give up reading a book as soon as they can. So I need to grab them in the first chapter. And if all they read is the first chapter, then they're still going to walk away with one of my best ideas. And it also made me realize that the thing that makes stuff that you're making great tends to be the structure of it rather than the details of it. If you have great details, poorly structured, you get a meh reaction, which is what I got with the draft that I shared you. If you have great details, really well constructed, then that's where the magic happens. And I really wondered, I mean, I love that you shared that story, which is like, this is a totally different book. It's like, it kind of was a totally different book because it, even though it had probably 80% of the same words, the weight and the structure of it had changed completely. So the impact of it landed differently.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting hearing you say this now, looking back on it, because, and I wish I'd gotten in that early draft even a little more, because one of the things that I think about when I read books is, what's the angle for the conversation for our audience? The problems I'm hearing from our members, our listeners, the struggles I'm hearing about in our academy conversations, what's the thing in this book that's going to help them today? Right. And actually, speaking of behind the scenes, I have a hard time now not reading a book that way. in fact, a friend and I read John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath a couple of years ago. And I caught myself at points thinking, ooh, what do I want to ask Steinbeck about this point? And so it's hard now to undo that. And when I read the first version of the book, I came away from that thinking, and I didn't share this with you at the time, not because you wouldn't have been gracious, but I just timing. But I remember having the thought, I'm going to have to spend a bunch more time with this book to figure out what the angle is.
Right.
And the best books that we have on the show and the best work is often when I get to something in the book and it's immediately apparent. And when I picked up the final version of the book and looked at it, I was like, oh yeah, I know exactly where we're going with this conversation. And I think it comes back to what you said about structure.
Yeah. And it's really interesting, Dave, that within this final version of the book, I can talk about its value in a single breath. You know, our working relationships determine our happiness and success. Mostly we cross our fingers and hope for the best. Build the best possible relationship you can that's safe, vital, and repairable. Do it with a keystone conversation, a conversation about how you work together, not what you're working on. And when I'm like, that for me is the symptom. It's like the lead indicator that I've got a clean book, because part of what I'm trying to create is the shortest book I can that's still useful, and a short, useful book that has a single idea and an arc through it, so that people are just compelled to keep reading till they get to the end, because it keeps being useful for them and it keeps making sense for them.
I think there's a leadership lesson here potentially too, which is you are someone who, by all traditional measures as an author and as a coach, has had extraordinary success.
Right.
The coaching habit, I mean, it's in your bio that it's the best-selling coaching book of the century. That is not like you overselling it at all. That is like the truth by any measure on looking at the coaching habit. Yep. And one of the challenges that leaders have when they've had success and they've built a brand and they've had a lot of people praise them is that it becomes harder for people to tell them truth.
Yes.
You clearly overcame that in this process by
I'm never making that mistake again, Dave.
Yeah, but you went down a path that wasn't working. But more interesting to me is that you found a way to hear that truth of what people said, that nope, not the way to go. And you listened and you changed direction. And as you look back on that, what, if anything, do you think you did to frame it being safe for people to talk to you about that?
Well, I'm not sure, Dave. That's an interesting question. I think it's very helpful for me to just have come to the realization that almost all of my ideas have a fair amount of bunkum built into them. And so I should be suspicious of my own authority at all times. And also I have a more of a, I guess you'd call it a personal mission, which is I want to be a great teacher. And I also want to decenter myself from a place of being a guru, you know, kind of put up on a pedestal or on a spotlight. I want to make space for other people to feel that. So I have a skeptical internal relationship between my own status as a teacher, where teaching is a big part of my identity and how I want to change the world, but also the conferred authority that sometimes being a teacher can bring with it. So that's really helpful, which is like, I'm just really curious as to see how people can help me with this and make my ideas better. I think it's in part, perhaps I'm speculating, Dave, but the people I asked tend to be people who I knew a little bit. And I was able to put that out as this isn't about me. This is about trying to make my book a little better. So if you can be as blunt as possible so that my book can move from being not very good to being better, I'd be really grateful for that. So I really tried to remove it being about Michael and what Michael's doing, and more about the person giving me feedback and me looking at the third point, as it's called in facilitation, looking at the artifact of the book, going, that book, you and I are both on the same side here. How do we make that thing better? And I think that invitation to help might have made it easier for people as well.
The other piece that I noticed in what you said earlier is you got kind of a meh response, or in some cases, not a lot of response.
Right.
And I think an inexperienced leader reads silence as agreement.
Yep.
And I think it's interesting that you got a little bit of that, meh, not a lot of excitement.
And it's good, Michael. Yeah, keep going. I'm like, oh dear, because the difference is there.
Yeah, like you read that as like, ooh, yellow light, red light, maybe.
Yeah.
Of yeah. I'm not hearing. I'm not hearing like some of the enthusiasm I'd normally hear. And it doesn't mean that people think that it's good. It may mean that something else is going on.
Yeah. You know, my friend Mark Bowden, who talks about influence and performance, you know, and who's one of the kind of early teachers for me around how brain science works. And he's like, you know, you've got three responses to you. There's attraction, repulsion, and indifference. And almost everybody's indifferent to you all the time. You couldn't handle it otherwise. You know, it'd be too much. But you're, for the relationships that matter, you want a strong reaction. And so when people are coming in going, it's a solid 7 out of 10, Michael, I'm like, that is death. That is a book that goes out that is just good enough to be published. And just mediocre enough not to do anything with it and to be a waste of time and money and resource. So I'd much rather have a strong reaction against the book than a mediocre reaction. I'd rather have a 1-star review than a 3-star review.
What a great way to think about it. And thank you so much for all the work you have been through, you continue to go through as a writer, as a coach, to listen and to struggle with the structure and the wording and the message to provide us with frameworks that are so helpful to all of us in our work. I'm just eternally grateful.
Dave, it's a pleasure. I love talking to you. Thanks for being in my life.
The pleasure's mine.